like if you really value that relationship with them, like they're going to value it back. So it's like, you know, you put into what you're going to get out of it and they're going to do the same.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Portable Trevor here. And today we have a very special guest. And normally I talk about filmmakers and creative people on here, but today I have an athlete, which is much different. Please welcome Miles Christian. What's up, man?
Trevor, how's it going, man?
Dude, I'm great. So me and Miles go way back. We went to high school together. We played soccer. But Miles was different because he was way ahead of me in soccer. He was phenomenal. He has his jersey retired at our high school. He also played like basketball, and you played football too.
Yeah,
I kicked in high school.
Yeah,
that's rad. And yeah. We're gonna hear about his story today and all that he's done. But currently, Miles, like you're the head coach for the boys team at Cleveland High School from our hometown.
Yes, head coach for the men's and women's team. So I don't want people to forget about the girls because they. Ever since I took the boys' job, they already feel slighted a little bit because I'm with the boys.
Yeah, I forgot to post about them. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that's not an issue at all. They'll be all right. Mm-hmm.
So. They'll be cool. But yeah, man, what's that like? What's being a head coach at such a young age? Like you're only 26, right?
25. I turned 26 in like 2 or 3 weeks. So,
nice, dude. Happy early birthday.
Thank you. being a head coach is a lot of fun. You know, I've experienced the assistant role too, being on the guy side for a couple of years, but I'm more familiar with, I guess, the head coach because when I got hired on at Cleveland, I was coming straight out of college, coming from Bryan College where I had played soccer, and I really didn't have a ton of experience. You know, I had a very, very strong playing background, and at the time, in that spring, I got the job in July of 2016. And during that spring, I had been helping out at Bryan as just kind of as a student assistant and had been working in our rec programs here at the Greater Cleveland Soccer Complex with a couple different people and just starting to really make connections and starting to get my feet wet in the coaching world. But really, like, as soon as I got the job at Cleveland, it was just I was being thrown into the fire a little bit just because I didn't really have a lot of experience and – you know, obviously I knew the game, but coaching is so much different than playing. So that was interesting, but it's really fun. It's very rewarding. It's very challenging at times, especially in the high school world, because you never really know what you're going to get out of your high school athletes. You know, some days it's good, some days it's bad. You've got kids that are there to play for fun. You've got kids that are there to, you know, try to obtain a college scholarship, you know, whatever their reason is, they're all different. You know, it's not like the college environment where they're all there. They're all there on scholarship and trying to play at a high level. Whereas high school, it's a mix of people, you know, like, I mean, I've got kids that I've openly asked like, hey, do you want to play in college? They're like, no, I just want to go to school. And that's totally cool. And that's totally fine. You know, not every player wants to go and play in college because it's just a commitment. So being a head coach, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. You know, it's nice because now being both the head coach for the men's and women's team, I have control of entire Cleveland soccer. You know, Cleveland soccer is me. I'm the face of it. So, you know, whatever I want to do, I can do. It's nice to have so many choices. And like if I want to put up a sign because there's a, you know, like a really cool motivational speech I saw, or like if I want to hang it in the locker room, I'm just like, hey, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna hang it, you know, and I can make it my own, so that's cool. But the most rewarding part and the coolest part is the relationships I have with my players. I mean, they're just so much fun. The boys are,
hey Miles, real quick, can you turn off your notifications? They're like piercing my ear.
yeah sorry,
you're all good, man.
And I apologize because I was trying to pull up the stream and in my messages, but I couldn't get them to go off. So let me see, where is the easiest place? I'm not technology savvy. Where should I go? I got a MacBook.
Let's see, if you go to your settings, I think there's a notifications tab thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Click on your settings and
notification.
Where is it?
Let's see here.
This is the content you guys signed up for. Tech support with Miles.
Sorry, all your followers. Notification.
Yeah, you can go on Do Not Disturb for now.
Okay. Do Not Disturb. Can I put that on forever? Because I don't want to be disturbed.
yes. You got to stay focused.
Yeah, I know. From, let's see here, 6 p.m., bang. Okay. So let's see here. I think I've got it on Do Not Disturb currently.
Cool. Yeah, man. So what is...
up your ears again. Sorry.
Oh, you're good, man. Yeah, just like a couple times, I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So what is the job of a coach? Because I think a lot of people don't really understand what a coach does. Because, like, if you think, like, professionally, like... I've heard some people say, like, why is there even a coach? Like, these guys are professionals. They don't really need anyone to lead them. They just kind of play the game. But at a high school level, you're not really babysitting either, or, like, taking control. Yeah. So what exactly is the job of a coach?
Yeah, so 90% of coaching isn't even on the field, which is crazy because, you know, you as the spectator just see the coach, you know, on the sideline directing players, telling them what to do. Whereas in the, especially in the high school world, there's so much more that goes into it. You know, the first thing I quickly realized is that, you know, you have a support system in your administration and other teachers at the high school, but a lot of it is you are on your own. So fundraising, I have to do all fundraising for the program. Scheduling, I'm in charge of that. You know, filling out field trip forms to go to games, I'm in charge of that. So all of the, like, the little managerial things that they have people doing at the professional level and even at the college level, so that way the head coach can just focus on coaching, I have to do. So, you know, a lot of times it just feels like literally 90% of my job is not soccer, which it always is because it's geared toward that direction. Whatever I'm doing is for the soccer team, but it doesn't always feel like that. So, you know, if there's a one of the things I hate the most, and I don't know why I hate this, is the concession stand. I despise it. You know, like, I'm like, if I can, like, put that on a parent, I'm like, please, like, just run this for me. I don't want to deal with it. And it's because that's just one thing I figured out that I don't like dealing with. So thankfully there are good parents that will step up and do some of those things for you. But just little things like that, you just don't think about. You're like, who runs the concession stand? That's me. Like, I have to organize that. So a lot of it is dealing with managerial things. A lot of it is relationship building, you know, getting these players to buy into, you know, what you're selling them a little bit, getting them to trust you, getting them to understand that you do actually care about them, because there are a lot of coaches out there that are just in it just to win games, and I feel like those coaches aren't the most successful ones, and the coaches that get it understand that it's most importantly about the kids and it's about the playing. So it's a lot of non-soccer things. And then, you know, obviously you have practice and you have planning your sessions and then you have, you know, playing in the games, but in soccer, you don't really coach a lot during the game. It's a sport that's not like, you know, basketball or football, that's every single play is often controlled. Soccer, it's a lot of free play. It's a lot of decision-making. It's a lot of, you know, you set up tactically how you're going to go at teams, but there's a lot of trust in the players. So even during game days, I'm not doing a ton of coaching. That comes during practice. So there's a lot of different things, just apart from being on the sideline and looking cool in my little Under Armour t-shirts and quarter zips I have. So other than that, it's a lot of just non-soccer things that you would just never even think about, especially at the high school realm, is dealing with parents. That's sometimes that is interesting. You know, I've not had too many conflicts. I could probably think of like two or three that I've encountered. But yeah, grades, dealing with players' grades. That's another one. So it's like, you know, at the high school level, you just have to do pretty much everything, which is okay.
Is it hard to tell a kid if they're failing to be like, hey, man, you're not going to play?
No. It's not hard for me at all because I have like a grade policy. So one thing we implemented with the boys team this past season, as soon as the head coach stepped down and I took over, this is the first thing I wanted to address, because we have so many players and we have so many talented players that, you know, there, it came a time where it was like, Easter of last season, we suspended 11 players after Easter break for grade issues. And jeez. And I was just like, why are we dealing with this? You know, like, we are such a talented team and such a talented program that, so we don't need to be dealing with this. So I went in and I told the guys, I said, look, I said, if you all want to be great, it's got to start in the classroom. So I told them that, you know, if you fail a class in the first semester, you're sitting 3 games guaranteed. Count on it. And that, so basically that wipes away their preseason, because we have about 4 preseason games for varsity, 3 for JV. So if a JV kid failed a class from the first semester, they had to sit all 3 JV or preseason games. Just part of it, you know, like, make good, not even make good grades, but just pass classes, just pay attention, you know? So I put it on them, you know, because it's their grades. And I tell them, one of the first things I tell them in the locker room is like, look, none of you are going pro. I tell them that, you know, it's like if you were pro, you'd be in an academy somewhere. You'd be signed already. Like, you're not. Like, sorry. I hate to break it to you. You live in Cleveland, Tennessee. You're not going pro. And if you do, prove me wrong. You know, I'd be the first one to congratulate you and support you. But I mean, these kids aren't going pro. So, like, what's really the most important thing? Their grades. You know, getting a good GPA, so that way if they do sign a scholarship, the GPA will help them, and maybe they can get some academic money and get their school paid for, you know?
You took grades really seriously when you were in high school and college, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just a natural, growing up, my parents were super hard on me with grades, especially. It was, you know, yeah, obviously I had to have all A's for me. And then a B, you know, A's and B's, a B if it was like, you know, a harder class, they kind of understood, but like C's were not okay. High school, I think I had like right at like a 3.9 GPA. My ACT score wasn't great. It still kind of pisses me off to this day. I left with like a 22. I took it 6 times, and that was the highest I got. And it just still like frustrates me, because like I graduated college with a 3.58, you know, and one of the deals at Bryan was if you graduated from Bryan with over a 3.5 and you attended school on site there, they would pay for your master's degree. So like I got my master's degree paid for because of my grades. So I always go back to the ACT and I'm like, you know what? Like, screw you, ACT. I didn't need you to begin with. Like, I can do this on my own. And I just figured out that I was a slow test taker too. I mean, teachers are cool, like, especially at college, like, they'll give you time to work on stuff if you ask for it. So I just figured out that I was just thorough with my test. And, you know, if you gave me as much time as you want on the ACT, I could at least make a 30 for sure. But grades are super.
Yeah, I did not do well in the ACT either. I barely even made a 20, if anything. And
it just shows you how quick of a test taker you are. Obviously it's measuring how smart you are, but like it really, like if you can read fast and you can process things quick, you know, great. But you know, you get to college and they're like, oh, but they're not going to give you time to do this. I'm like, yeah, they are. Like, they're human beings, I get it. So
did college and like just like work outside of athletics, did that ever get in the way of you performing well at all,
as in like did my schoolwork kind of get in the way of like performing well on the soccer field?
Yeah, did it ever like bog you down? Like, were you ever like playing a game like thinking, oh man, I'm not gonna have time to study for this test, or I'm not gonna have time to do my homework? Did that ever get to you?
No, not really, not in college. You know, one thing that I kind of figured out early was kind of how to prioritize things and time management. You know, learned that very quickly. But then again, I was an education major, so it's not like I was studying up. You know, studying late for biology, you know, biology is a hard class. But one thing I really did during my time at Bryan was I took certain classes during certain semesters. So like one of my hardest semesters was the spring of my sophomore year. I took like 19 hours, and in those 19 hours, one of them was biology. So it's obviously it's a 4-hour class. You've got a lab. It's just hard because the biology is not easy in college. But I took that not during soccer season. So I kind of knew if a class was harder, I was going to take it not during the fall. And, you know, I took summer school, so I was able to kind of take less hours during the semesters when I was at Bryan, just because it helped me, you know, just enjoy things a little bit more. You know, I never, you know, there were a couple of times where I had to study on the bus, you know, after games or before games, but, you know, a lot of it was, you know, papers, you know, just writing a ton of papers. But I just kind of figured out early how to, you know, prioritize and use time management. And, you know, it was helpful that I had friends that cared about their grades too. But I don't really ever remember, especially at Bryan, being bogged down. Obviously, every college kid runs into the finals at the end of the week. You've got like 4 or 5 papers due. You've got 3 tests. I mean, I dealt with that, but not during season to where it was like, oh man, this is, you know, not, this is making me not perform at the level I want to perform at. And a lot of times, if it came to that, I just kind of pushed schoolwork to the side and, you know, the soccer kind of became the priority, which isn't always the right thing to do, but that's just how I was. So
I have this one distinct memory of you whenever we were playing soccer. It was whenever we were like getting on, we were going to practice one day and we were all like getting our stuff on, getting all our gear on. And I remember you like walked in and you were just like so pissed at this like one test or something like that. And you were like, I didn't come here to study. I came here to play sports. You were just so mad. And then you just like, you played your butt off on the soccer field and just like let off all that steam. I was like, man, what a guy.
That sounds about right. You know, like saying, yeah. You know, it's probably a little bit more explicit to what I said as well, but I just, yeah. That kind of stuff is just fuel of the fire, you know, like I've talked about that with you about what fuels your fire, like that kind of stuff, like pissing me off in the classroom. You know what? Like, God, I got a 90 on the test. I wanted a 93. I wanted the A. Like, this is going to piss me off. That kind of stuff helps me. It just kind of makes me mad. Not really makes me mad, but irritates me enough to like, you know, let off that steam in a positive way. So, yeah.
And we had a lot of good times at Bradley. Like, I mean, obviously, you got your jersey retired. It's right over your shoulder in your, shot. And like you had a crazy time in high school. Can you tell me about how that was and what made you want to like rise above everyone else on the field?
So I got to Bradley in the fall of 2008. That was our first semester because we were the same grade. And then our first year was 2009, spring of 2009. But did you play soccer that year? Did you play in 2009?
I played, I started my sophomore year.
Okay.
So you did play a little late.
Yeah. So when I came in, there was already I didn't know any better just because I was so young and I was kind of, I didn't recognize the kind of buzz, I guess, around me. Cause I was just young, I was 14 years old. Like, I'm 5'3", 5'4" on a good day, like, you know, maybe 120 pounds soaking wet. Like, I'm not a big kid at this point. But I had the technical and the ability and the skills to kind of, you know, be above some other players. So when I came in my freshman year, you know, I just was like, you know, I knew I was good enough to play varsity. I wanted to play varsity. But straight away it was like, you could kind of tell with the guys, it was like, well, there's this bit of like buzz around me. It's like, oh, this kid's going to turn everything around. And I'm like, I didn't recognize that at this time. I was just a freshman just trying to fit in. And so I remember being in it was a rainy day. So we were inside and it was before a play day. And so, Coach McKinney at the time, she and Blackman were, drawing on the board and kind of going through the lineup. And we were playing a 4-4-2, I think. And immediately, like, she puts me in center mid, you know, right in the middle of, you know, the lineup. And around me is several seniors. And I came in and took people's spots. So in a way, it was like you had these guys that appreciated me and, like, wanted to kind of, you know, help me be successful because it was like, oh, hey, this kid's good. Like, he can make some things happen for us. But then there were some other kids that were like kind of didn't like me in a way because it was like, well, I've come in, I'm this little pipsqueak of a kid. I'm already, the coach has already kind of favored me in a way, and I've taken your spot. You know, so that freshman year was interesting, and I played like multiple different positions. I started in center mid, and then they moved me to center back, which I wasn't happy about because I felt that I was too good offensively to be in the back. And kind of the reasoning behind it, I didn't like, you know, after talking to the coach and everything, and just wasn't a fan of, you know, the reasoning behind it, you know. But I did what I needed to. I played in the back, and then kind of eventually made my way up forward, you know, that year, and played some more center mid. But, you know, that first year I only had like, because the majority of my games I was playing center back. So, you know, playing defense, you're not scoring a lot. So I think I had like 4 goals and like 2 assists. Well, then that next year I come back, it's my sophomore year. I guess that's when you started playing, and I'd already kind of solidified myself in that lineup. And, you know, I was obviously, I'm like, I want to be attacking. I want to be an attacking player. I do not want to play in the back. I'm not going to, and at that time I was very keen on like, I am not playing in the back. That's not what I'm going to do. And, you know, it carried over into my club season that fall because I was playing on a U18 team and I was only 15 at the time. And I was wanting to play center mid. I was kind of wanting to play like an attacking mid role and just be creative and, you know, score goals. That's what I wanted to do. And, you know, my club coach put me in the back because that's where they needed me. So that whole club season, I ended up having to play in the back as well, playing center back. And, you know, long term, and then I'll get into this later, like it prepared me for my roles at Bryan, you know, and I'll talk more about that here, you know, here shortly. But
yeah, totally.
Yeah. So played, you know, my sophomore year, you know, I start to kind of find my way. I grew a bit, you know, wasn't still tall. I mean, I'm still probably like 5'5", you know, like not big, maybe like 130 pounds, you know, like that 130 is probably generous too. But you know, I've been working out with the basketball team a little bit. So I was starting to grow and kind of come into my own. And that season I scored like 9 goals. I don't even know how many assists. I think it was like 4. So kind of playing more, and it's more in an attacking role, you know, being, you know, just, I'm trying to figure out the right word, but like becoming more of who I am today. I guess that's the right way to put it. So then my junior year, you know, I grown to about 5'9". And that's when Blattman took over. And that year, it was just different. You know, I felt different. I felt more explosive. I felt more powerful. My growth spurt, like I felt it. And so that season was kind of the breakout year. That's when people like started, you know, to really recognize who I was as a player, because that first game of my junior year, you know, Martin, you know, you remember Martin Saragosa, he had gotten hurt in the alumni game. And that was kind of my other guy who I played off of. And, you know, he was a good player, Bradley, and, you know, didn't have him for the first two or three games. And so that preseason, like I remember like kind of coming in, we had a lot of new faces into the lineup because we lost like Tyler Brock, Cameron Taylor, like that class of kids. You remember them?
Oh yeah, they were great.
Yeah, like great dudes. You know, I love Tyler Brock, but you know, we graduated a lot of guys, so it was like a lot of, you know, didn't know like what we were going to look like. We had a lot of new faces, graduated a pretty strong class, and you know, for Bradley speaking, you know, and you know, that first game, you know, like don't have Martin. You know, we go down 4-1 at halftime, and I remember thinking like, and we're losing to a team that's trash. Like I'd tell you this, I mean, they're horrible. So we're down 4-1. I've scored on a penalty kick. And I remember Blattman just like laying into us. I don't know if you remember that halftime talk, but I kind of remember like going out in the second half and was like, all right, like I got to play. Like I really got to do this, you know, and scored like 1 goal. And then it was just like, they just kept coming, like, you know, you know, the 5th goal when I scored and tied it up to make it 6-6, I remember like the goal just being like huge. Like it like wouldn't have mattered. Like if I would have shot, like it was going in. And that was, you know, the game where I recognized, I was like, oh, like I'm pretty good at this. And, you know, I was more self-aware of who I was as an athlete and who I was as a soccer player. And then it just gave me the confidence to be the best I could be. And so after that first two games, I had 8 goals already, which was, I was one away from, you know, tying my, you know, scoring record the year before with 9 goals. And that year I wanted to come, yeah, I was coming in, I just wanted to score 15. That's all I wanted to score was 15 goals. And by game number 2, we had 14 or 15 regular season games. I already had 8. And so I was like, okay, I need to readjust this. But just that feeling of always scoring, you know, I tell it to my players all the time, like, do you not want to be on the front page of the paper? Because me, I love it. Like, I love picking up the paper and recognize, like, hey, you know, Christian scores, you know, header or whatever it is. Like, I love it. And not that I'm like sitting here like reaching for attention, but that goes out in my community. It's just cool to see your name on the front page of the paper. And so that year it was like just the confidence it gave me, you know, throughout the years, just goal after goal after goal. And then, you know, we go in and, you know, we're playing Cleveland at home for the first time, and they had just graduated a bunch of players. They were still good, but there was always that kind of like, oh, it's Bradley, you know, like their soccer team's not any good. And that year we beat them 1-0, just defensively anchored down, did what we need to. And then I was fortunate enough to score in the 75th minute to win it for us. And just that feeling of, you know, scoring and beating teams we shouldn't beat, it just made me hungrier and hungrier. So by the time my senior year came around, people, you know, recognized who I was. So it became harder for me to score. But I went into that season wanting to score 30 goals. That was my mark. That was my goal. And I know, you know, not many kids would ever go in and say, all right, I'm going to score 30 in the year. I mean, that's, you know, probably for most schools, that's probably their school record. But that was what I wanted to do. I was like, I'm getting to 30. And by the time my senior year left, I scored 33 that season. And probably should have scored more. You know, I felt like there were so many things that I could have done looking back on it to have scored more. Just understanding the game better. But, you know, I just was so hungry and was willing to do whatever it took to be the best, because that's what I wanted to be. And just that.
So what did that transformation look like for you in your head whenever you were like, I need to rise above and like, I need to help out my team and for the betterment of my team? And second of all, like, what does like self-awareness look like, and why do you think that's important to have that as an athlete?
So the first question, a lot of it, you know, me being great derived from, I am definitely 100% a team player, 100%. You know, I played pickup basketball today with my friends, and there were 4 dudes on the court that were way better than me. And on my team alone, there were 2 that could just score. Like, you know, one guy played at Maryville College. The other was, you know, just an elite high school athlete. And, you know, he's a quarterback in college right now. But my role was like, I'm just going to guard Bryce, my best friend, and just guard him. Like that was my role. I'm just going to be a defender this entire time and run around and try to make him tired. But my role on that Bradley team was like, hey, if you want to win, you're going to have to score goals. And I just figured that out during my junior year, because it was like, if it wasn't coming from me and Martin, who was it going to come from? You know, and, you know, talking to Blackman, you know, it was like, you know, there just weren't a lot of other options. And so not that that's a, you know, not trying to slight those other guys, but it's just the reality of it. So, you know, I recognized that, like, I had to rise above, you know, and be better than everybody else so we could win games, because ultimately that's all I wanted to do. You know, I tell teams, or I tell my players all the time, like, I would trade, you know, all my accolades for, you know, an opportunity to go to the state tournament. Hands down, I would turn in that jersey right now. To, if I could go back in time, I would turn that jersey in to Bradley Central and say, if I turn this in and you give me a shot at the state tournament, that's what I want. I would do it 7 days a week, every day. You know, would never question that, because I just want to win. So you don't play, you don't play sports to, you know, for the individual accomplishments. You play to win. You play to, you know, be happy with your teammates. And I just recognized that it was like, if I wanted to do that, I had to work harder than everybody else to ensure that I scored a couple goals to put us in the spot to win the game. And that's just the reality of it. That was my role on my team, you know, and the pickup basketball game for us to win the series today, I had to guard Bryce for 7 games, and that's what I had to do. But ultimately, it's about winning, so that's what I was going to do. My role at Bradley, it was, hey, like, I'm just going to have to score a crap ton of goals and hope that we win, you know. And so that's why I chose to work harder and strive to be the best, was because winning was my main goal, always. And two, becoming self-aware, it's, you know, a lot of people don't, probably don't really figure this out until later in life. You know, I feel like that's why so many of us, it's like hard for people our age at 24 and 25, you come out of college and it's like, what do you want to do with your life? Because you don't really have an identity yet. So for me at that time as a player, it was like the confidence I obtained from that first game, my junior year, it was kind of like the light that was like, hey, like, you can be this, just take it. And so it was like, it was just kind of it just took one game and my coach Blackman just instilling that confidence in me, saying like, yes, you can do this. And then I was like, okay, I can do it. And now I'm self-aware that I can do it, you know, because I'm backing that statement up with performances. So that process just kind of started my junior year. And then by the time my senior year, it was like, okay, when teams are, you know, man marking you and they've got a guy following you around the entire game, that's when you recognize like, okay, like, if you were some scrub, they wouldn't do this. But, you know, this is, you know, for teams, their game plan to stop you defensively is to send a guy, to take a guy out of their formation to follow you around all the time. And that's kind of what that looked like. But understanding like that as a player and happening it at the right time made me who I was to be by the time my senior year left. And it gave me that confidence going into college.
Dude, that's awesome. And going into college, I'm sure like you improved more. And I think it's funny, like, I feel like a lot of people on their self-aware journey, usually like no one else is involved. Like, it's just all about you, but you seeing people like going after you and like saying like, hey, guard that guy. That's kind of cool. That kind of like fueled your self-awareness. I never hear that.
Yeah. And like, no, I mean, myself, like, nothing I've ever done in life has been because of me. It's been because of other people that have helped me get there. And I think that if I were to say that, I was like, no, it's just on me. Like, no, like, Tucker Blackman didn't run my guts out to ensure I was in the best shape possible to be in that spot, you know, to make sure that in the 75th minute against Cleveland, like, you've got to sprint down the field to get in the right spot so Jordan Steele can throw you the header to head it in, you know. So it's always been like other people have helping me do that, you know. And just obviously naturally I start to kind of figure things out a little bit because I'm human, and it's like, okay, this works. Ah, this is who I can be, you know. And I'm blessed with two good parents that have helped me kind of understand that and challenge me to be the best. But I think one thing that's helped me, you know, is always having my eyes set on being the best I can be. So that way, you know, you don't kind of backtrack in a sense and become too arrogant, or, you know, you kind of, your vision becomes cloudy because if you are selfish, you know. But I feel like with me, it's helped having, you know, constant goals and being challenged and being pushed, because it's like, well, no, you're not good enough right now. You got to be better and better and better. So, you know, that's why I constantly throw challenges at myself, especially when it comes to sports and in particular the soccer world.
Right. And I'm also making a documentary about Miles right now, and it's been really fascinating to like follow your journey. And I've been trying to find a story, like, what is Miles' story? Is it just all of his accolades and everything? But I think the power of your story is two aspects. Like, one is your ability to inspire others. Like, you're doing incredible in your hometown of Cleveland. Like, you're coaching kids and helping them find colleges. You're helping them just in life in general. And two, you just have such an amazing surrounding. Like you've surrounded yourself with good people, good friends, and you have an amazing family. Like they're very supportive of you and what you do. And I just think that's incredible. Like not a lot of people like are quite blessed like you are. And I think that's just an amazing story on your part.
Yeah. I mean, I will sit here and I could talk to you all day about how great my friends and family are, because mm-hmm. you a lot of people, and especially this is hard for high schoolers to understand. It's like, you are, I heard a really good reference one time. If you hang around the garbage can, you might not be garbage, but what do you look like? And so I heard that from another coach, one of my really good friends, and I was like, that makes a lot of sense, because it's like, who you surround yourself with is who you become. So if you surround yourself with losers and people who don't have any drive or don't have any, passion for what they do, or maybe complain a lot. I hate complainers, just because you're not working towards a solution. Or, I tell my players all the time, I'm like, I'll give you something to really complain about. Let's go to Africa and see if those kids, I kind of can be extreme, but like those kids in Africa, like you don't have shoes to play with. Like you guys have got nice cleats. You were playing on a turf field. You've got, you don't, the only thing you had to worry about was showing up on time. Those kids are wondering about where their next meal comes from, that's a bit extreme, I know, but there are a lot more things in life to complain about. So that's why I don't like complaining, because it's just annoying too. But
and that's like with me. Like I moved here to Atlanta, and I tell people I live with 5 roommates, and sometimes the first thing people say is like, "Oh man, I bet you guys like party all the time." Like, no, we are very like highly productive people. Like we don't just sit around. Sure, like we have our relaxing days. Like everybody needs those. Like I'm about to watch the new Last Dance documentary right after this and sit on my couch.
Me and you both.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, that's actually why we usually I do my show at 8, and Miles was like, "Can we do it at 7? I want to watch the MJ documentary tonight." It's so good. I definitely want to talk about that for a quick second. Yeah. But if you hang around with people that are, gonna smoke weed all day, or if you hang around people that just want to chill after they work, or just have no ambition in your life, and that's what you're gonna become.
Right.
And so it wouldn't make any sense for you to hang out with, like filmmakers or anything. You hang out with like people that are athletic and want to like work out and just be better than they were yesterday. Like people like Bryce and all sorts of people.
Yeah. And it's not that like, I don't like hanging out with filmmakers. Cause when you came up and like we're documenting, like I've never done anything like this. This is the first time I've ever done a podcast. So like, it's been cool because it's so different and I'm so curious about, what it is. I mean, like, I'm so far from being technology savvy. Like, you had to show me how to turn off on my laptop. Yeah, like, I just don't know how to do it because I am, I guess, out there trying to be more hands-on with people who I know are productive. It's just because I feel like that's how you're going to get better. I'll compliment Bryce. I mean, he's been there since kind of day one, but dude is, he is ambitious. I mean, and so that being around him has helped because he's very driven. In school, he was very like, "All right, I'm going to get good grades." And so like that for me and him, like we fit well together because it was like, I wanted to be good. He wanted to be good. We were always having to guard each other in basketball practice. It was always battles, like, and to this day, like literally before I got on this podcast, I was playing pickup. And guess who I guarded the entire time? Bryce. Like it's just, it's just how it is. So I think, it's just really important about who you surround yourself with, because for me personally, like if I find that you're complaining or, just doing like hard drugs, and that's kind of far, but like not aligning of who I want to be, then I'm not going to hang out with you. And I'll still be your friend, but like, I'm not going to reach out to you and be like, yeah, like, let's hang out this weekend. Like, no, like, I'm going to hang out with my people who I really care about and who have invested into me, and they know I'm invested in them.
Right. And like whenever we were filming, like that was like an important weekend for me. I feel like I grew as a filmmaker. Like I had to learn how to, cause I shot with you for a scrimmage, I think it was.
Yeah.
And it was so bright outside, and my camera, I know you're not a camera guy, but for, So aperture is basically how much light you're letting into your camera.
Right.
And I was putting it on the highest aperture I possibly could, and it was still way too bright. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to have to figure this out. So like I had to like play with my camera and like figure it out. And I also had like Jaren with me, like, again, somebody that I love surrounding myself with. Mm-hmm. And also just like watching you and like hanging out with like people that are driven. Like, that was an important weekend for me, just hearing your story. And like, you've got an inspiring story, dude, whether you realize it or not. And I feel like that helps you like coach better too. Like, it seems like your kids really look up to you.
Yeah. You know, and if they actually do look up to me, you'd have to ask them. But, you know, I think that's the biggest part of coaching is, you know, one, can you instill confidence in them? Can you get them to trust you? But like, if you really value that relationship with them, like, they're going to value it back. So it's like, you know, you put into what you're going to get out of it, and they're going to do the same. And obviously all kids are different, but, you know, these kids, I feel like these, especially the guys, they, you know, this past season has been hard. So it's been interesting. I mean, like, I've had, you know, I'll have guys, they'll call me, they'll text me out of the blue, like, hey, you know, coach, you know, I need this. All right, bro. Like, I'll help you, like, however I can. And they know that. And I tell them, I'm like, if you need something, reach out to me. I'm here for you. I've got your back, you know? And I think that just me being who I am, like, them recognizing that, like, I'm literally, like, if they're going into a foxhole, I'm leading them into the foxhole to go to war with them. Like, I'm going to be leading the charge. You know, I tell them that, you know, I would never make you do something I wouldn't do. So that's why, you know, I jump in fitness sessions with them. You know, like, I'm just there for them. And I think they realize that. So, yeah, the coaching is all about the players. And the minute it doesn't become about the players, it's the minute I need to leave. So
I feel like a lot of leadership is not just telling kids what to do or telling anyone what to do. It's also like your willingness to do it with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why, you know, I feel like the day we ran the 5K as a team, I feel like we really took a step as a program, because they realized, they were like, oh, like, he's not one of those coaches that's like, yep, on the line, here's your whistle, they're propped back, like, chilling. Like, no, this guy's going to lead the way. And that's what I did. And not only did, you know, when I ran that 5K with him, I told him, I was like, look, I'm just going to sit here. I'm a man of my word. I'm not going to make you do something I would never do. And that's why I'm going to run the 5K with you today. And they were like, oh, let's go, let's go. I'm like, yeah, like, no, let's go. Like, I'm going to try to beat you now. So, like, you have to understand that I'm competitive. I'm not going to let you win. So, yeah.
Did he even beat you?
One kid beat me. One. that was in preseason. So we had like 65, 70 kids out there. But the one kid that did beat me, it was kind of cool. We kind of had a moment. But, like, I basically – we did it along the greenway. So, you know how Cleveland is. It's like that practice soccer field's up top. We ran all the way down, hit the sidewalk along Raider Drive, and then hit the greenway. And so, like, there was a certain point, like, we ran it, we hit it, and then we came back. So he was probably, I would call it striking distance, but he's, you know, about a little over five yards behind me the entire time. And so when we hit the final stretch running up to the practice field where we're going to stop, it's a little bit on an incline. So I told him, he followed me. I was like, hey, like, come on, like, let's do it together. Let's do it together. And so he comes up there and we're running. Well, as we start to kind of hit the final stretch, you could kind of tell he was like a dog that was on a chain. He was like, you need to let him go. And finally I was like, his name's Tim. I was like, Tim, just take off, you know, beat me. And he just took off. And it was cool in a way, because when we got done, players recognize, they're like, oh, he's not immortal. Like, they all know me for the guy that's working out and, you know, being super fit and whatnot, but they recognize, like, oh, he's beatable. So it's like, you know, it's not like, oh, he's just doing this to show it off. Like, no, he's doing it because he actually cares about it and wants to do it with you guys. So it was actually good that someone beat me. But then I told them at the end, I was like, you know, we have a magic number for everything. So, like, if we run, you know, a mile, it's like, all right, the magic number is 6:30. Like, that's the time you had to get it in. If you didn't do it, like, you got an extra punishment. So I told them in the 5K, I was like, they're like, coach, what's the magic number? And I was like, the magic number is you had to beat me. I was like, so all y'all 10 hills, see ya. And so they had to go run 10 hills because they lost to me. So that was fun. But the one kid that beat me, he just hopped right in with the guys and went and ran them. So, but that was the day we were so awesome. Took a step forward as a program. It was just cool because they really started to buy into what I was selling.
Dude, that's so cool. I remember that reminds me of, and I told you this story before. So mine and Miles is a high school soccer coach, Tucker Blackman, who I definitely want to have on the show at some point.
Yeah. That would be a character to have on.
It would be a great episode. But I remember, so me and Blackman, like I always like, I loved palling around with him. He liked palling around with me. And he would always play this game with me, like before and after. I would try to like work on my footwork and like juggle a ball or something. And Blackman liked to tease me and he would just like steal the ball from me. And then he would like motion me like, come on, try to take it from me. And I would try like all the time. And then there was just one week he took it from me and I was like bummed out that day or something like that. And he took it from me and he kind of like motioned like, come on, take it. And I was just like, what's the point? Like, I'm not going to be able to take it from you.
Yeah.
And I remember so distinctly just him looking at me and being like, that's why I want you to keep trying. And I've taken that to heart in so many things that I do now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, something may not look beatable or even seem beatable, but you should always try. And for that kid, for him to be like, for you to be like, come on, beat me, come on, try. Like you weren't trying to be like, come on, dude. Like you weren't showing off that you were faster than him. Yeah. You were trying to like encourage him, like, hey, you know you can do this, like try your best.
Yeah.
And he like gunned it and won. That's so cool.
Yeah. So it was just a good moment for him because he won. Like he was the first one done with the 5K. So yeah, it's just like I said, it goes back to instilling confidence in kids. You know, some kids got checked a little bit because they've never ran a 5K before and their time sucked. But, you know, for that one kid, it was like, oh, man, like all this work I've been putting in, like it's paid off, you know. So it's just a really cool moment as a coach.
Do you remember a time in your life where you worked just tirelessly to do something and it finally paid off?
Yeah. So my senior year of college, you know, I was coming into the year. I'd already been told by my coach that I was going to be a captain and whatnot. I guess there's really two moments, I guess, because I could use my sophomore year because it's kind of the same scenario. But my senior year, you know, I went into that summer because we were always given summer packets as for like conditioning, and so there was like different variations of sprints, distance runs, weight training, ball work, you know, agility work, whatever it was, like it was all in that packet. So that summer, you know, I knew going into that season it was going to be my last season, you know, kind of like as the player, like, you know, I knew I wasn't going to go pro, like that wasn't really in my thought. Like I never, like there were, you'll get like when in college, like there were a lot of guys that are like, oh yeah, I want to go pro. I'm like, well, you don't have the work rate to back it up, you know? And there's different things. And some of them have gone pro. You know, I had a kid who played with me. He went to Bryan and then has worked his guts out and he's playing in the USL championship now. You know, it's the league under the MLS. So he's a professional player. And so there are kids like that. But for me, I was like, you know, like I don't want to go pro. You know, I never, like if you do want to go pro, your commitment to the game has to match your goals. So for me, I was like, I kind of knew, I was self-aware. I'm like, I'm not some special, talented, like, you know, professional player. That's just not who I am. So I knew going into that summer, like this is going to be it. This is the last time I'm going to ever, you know, be a college, be a soccer player, you know, and then I know I was going to transition into coaching. So that summer, you know, I went to, and actually it's funny, I still have the whiteboard, but I went to Walmart and bought a whiteboard. And I mean, it's probably like, you know, like it's probably about 3 or 4 feet wide, you know, just a normal typical whiteboard. And at the time, obviously I didn't have my own house. So I was living at home and I taped the whiteboard and put it on this door. So the way I slept, it's kind of like I sleep on my left side. So when I woke up in the morning, the very first thing I saw was that whiteboard. Okay. So what I did on that whiteboard is I sectioned off part of it and put like Sunday through Saturday. Like these are the days. So like when I did my work, I would check off that day. And so every week, you know, I had to check off each day. It's like, hey, you did this, this day, you did this, this day. And it matched what I was doing in my packet and that, as well as some other stuff. But also like I wrote my goals up there for that season. So it's been a minute, but like that summer, like I knew the first thing was, is I wanted to win conference, as a team. I wanted to make the national tournament. Again, you know, we did that my sophomore year and it was so cool, being a part of that experience. And then I had like, some individual goals. There was one more that I can't think of, but one of them was being first team all conference, which, you know, there's at the time there was like 10 plus teams in the conference. So a lot of really good players, a lot of international players that have probably a better background than me, I guess, in the game. Just a lot of really good competition. But my goal was like, I'm going to be first team all conference, you know. I know. And my other goal was being academic all conference, you know, because I had done that the previous 2 years. I was like, you know, I really need to finish strong here with my grades. So that had like four goals. And every day, like I would go to sleep, I'd wake up. Those were the first things I saw, were those goals. And it's kind of, it's insane a little bit in a way, but I knew it was like, I've got to do everything I can to make sure that one, when I come in, I'm as fit as I've ever been, that I'm going to be the best leader I can be. And then like, I want to be first team all conference. Like that was what I wanted to do. It was like in high school, I wanted to be all state. So there's work that involves that. So that summer, you know, my coach texted me a couple of times and just asking about it. But I think on the top of my head, I think I skipped 2 days that entire summer of where I was either not running, not lifting, not playing. There was 2 days that entire summer where I did not do anything soccer related. So I just worked my guts out that summer. And, you know, in Tennessee, it's July and going, you know, it's hot. It's freaking hot as balls.
Very hot.
It's so hot. So like, you know, I was working at the time. So I just really, you know, like, and it kind of went back to my sophomore year, but I built some same habits. Like my sophomore year, my coach asked me to cut weight, which is crazy because you've seen me. Like, I'm not fat. So it's like, it was weird. I had to cut weight. But I was just very, very strict on what I ate. You know, I ate at home a lot. I'd make eggs, I'd grill chicken, vegetables, you know, like I didn't eat fast food, didn't drink any soft drinks, you know, just really devoted that summer to being the best I could as a player. And it ended up paying off because we ended up winning the regular season conference, which was good. You know, we ended up getting beat in the conference final, but they had this, like, when the final four teams make, the way it works is they make the conference semis, they had this like big banquet. And at the time we were the one seed, so we hosted. So it was at Bryan, but you know, I remember like being there with my team. And so they were like, all right, you know, third team got announced, second team got announced. And I was sitting there and I was kind of nervous because I had felt like that there were times during the season, I was like, well, I haven't been this good. I haven't been like, I felt like I wasn't having as good of a year as I did my junior year. And my junior year, I got kind of shafted a little bit. I didn't make a conference team. And so it pissed me off in a way because I was like, I had a good year and
jeez.
Great. So now it's fuel to the fire. So like my coach knew I wanted to make all conference. So, you know, it helped that we were the first team because the first team gets more conference picks and whatnot. But I remember the guy, the commissioner of the, you know, the league, he got up there and he's like, all right, and now for the first team of all conference. And I was the very first name that was announced. And so like that, like feeling of like I did this, like this, like, this is it. I'm one of the top. Cause I think there was like, you know, definitely 11, probably, you know, probably 13 or 14, maybe 15 guys most that made first team all conference out of 10 teams. So it was like, man, like I did this. And not only did I get to do it, but I did it with my best friend who played with me at Bryan too. So that was a cool experience for us. But I remember taking a picture and I've got it. It's like, I've only got like two things framed there are three things framed in my actual, this is my guest bedroom, but my actual room. And one of them is that first team all conference, because I just remember cherishing it so much. And when I got it, I sent a picture to my mom and dad, and I was like, proof that hard work will always pay off. Let's go. And that was, so I sent that to my parents. I was just like so happy, because I was like, I worked my tail off for this. And it, all that, all the summer runs, all the two-a-days, the, you know, working in the day, you know, getting off, lifting, then going and running in the heat, you know, all the time where, you know, on Friday nights, I wasn't hanging out with my friends. I spent it in a racquetball court, in the YMCA, juggling a ball, doing foot drills, you know, just getting touches. It all paid off. So that's the one moment that I can think of. And I use that, when we talk about goal setting, with my wellness classes, I use that example a lot. Just like, you know, it was a big stream, but like every morning I woke up and I had to see what I did the day before and what I was going to do today and in the future. But I always saw those goals, and it worked, because I busted my tail and it paid off.
Definitely. And that's something I'm trying to get better at. But I read somewhere a long time ago, like, if you write something down, you are more likely to remember it, and you're more likely to do whatever you write down.
Yep.
Physical, it's there. Don't type it. Don't draw it on your iPad. Like, literally get a pen and paper and write it, or a whiteboard. Uh-huh. But also, we got some comments here. So
really?
Yeah. So first of all, Weston, thanks for joining the stream. He said stream looks better, 10 out of 10. My dad commented, he's T off 721. He said pro soccer players are the top fit athletes in the world. Second is pro motocross racers. Do you believe that?
Pro soccer players are the top, the fittest athletes. You know, yeah, I mean, they're up there. You know, I would never – it's a different type of fitness, because it's a lot of running and it's a lot of cardiovascular and kind of muscular endurance, whereas you take like a – you know, not a basketball player, but maybe like a football player, like an American football player, because I see a guy says it's called football where I'm from. Yeah, I recognize that. I would call it football too, but we live in the South, and American football is always going to be king down here. There's no changing that. You know, during this quarantine, you tell people that they might cancel football season, they're going to quarantine harder than they've ever quarantined, because they're going to say football. But yeah, I would agree with that. And then with American football, it's more strength. But those guys are in crazy shape. You know, like, soccer players can't do as much weight as they can. So it's all comparative. It's like, it's built on your sport. But yeah, I would say that soccer players are up there with the fittest athletes, along with maybe probably like swimmers. You know, I could never do what Michael Phelps does. Lord have mercy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
he said second is pro motocross racers.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. But I do know that like NASCAR drivers have to be in pretty good shape because of the force they deal with in the car.
Oh yeah.
So I do know that.
That's nuts. And Otto and Seb, the simp gods. Yeah. I hope you guys are doing well. See you guys in the comments. Not sure who you guys are, but thanks for tuning in.
Yeah.
Let's see. But yeah, man, like, we're closing in on close to an hour. I try to keep these close to an hour, but yeah. Miles, like, you have an incredible story. Probably should have you on again just so you can tell the rest of it. But
yeah, I got some good soccer stories. If you ever want to hear them, just crazy ones from club days, college days. I mean, just nuts, like, you know, just wild moments. So
yeah, and also want to save it for the documentary, because I want people to tune in. Yeah. I don't have a name for it yet. I'm still editing it. Mm-hmm. There's still documentaries.
There's so much, you know.
Yeah, for real. And we kind of had to put a pause on it because, you know, the whole COVID thing. Yeah.
All right.
And like, Miles, I think that will add to your story, because you know, you told me that you're having some hard times through this, because you know, you can't coach or anything, and this is like your first year too.
Yeah. You know, to keep it light, like, you know, it sucks, because this year, you know, I felt like we had a team that was going to be in the state tournament, you know, and I talk about that now because I know our season's over. So I'm confident enough to say we were going to be there just because of all the things that were lining up. To not have that has been hard. But like I've told some other coaches, I'm like, I don't think these people understand, like, when I get back, like, I'm not going to be like, oh, I miss those seniors. Like, no, I'm going to be hungrier and more motivated than ever because I had it taken away from me, you know. And it's, you know, I hate it for these seniors, but for me personally, I'm going to coach harder than I've ever coached. You know, I'm still going to do, you know, the things with them that I would normally do in preseason and everything, but like they're going to get a more hungry and more motivated individual. You know, this is just fuel to the fire, you know. And like I told one of my coaches, I was like, it's going to take, you know, I'm going to be like the Incredible Hulk. You know, that's what it's going to be like. Like, I'm just going to be like Hulk smashing things, so happy to be back on the field whenever that moment does come.
Dude, that's so awesome. Well, Miles, thank you so much for being on, dude. Definitely would like to have you on again. Like, you're a very motivating guy. And yeah, can't wait to have you on again, man. Is there anything else you want to say?
Yeah, no, I'm good. Trevor, thanks for having me on. I love doing stuff like this because it's so different than what I'm used to doing. I have had to make some more home videos. You saw the one I made for the soccer team and the seniors, so I sent that to you. But yeah, I mean, this is fun. I love this stuff. I definitely want to be back on because we don't have to talk about soccer. We could talk about, you know, fitness. We could talk about, you know, different things. We could talk about all kinds
absolutely
of stuff. I mean, all kinds of stuff. So yeah, but more importantly, thank you for having me on. I've enjoyed this.
Sweet. And more importantly, Miles and myself, we have to go watch The Last Dance right now.
Yeah. If you haven't had a chance, you know, you need to watch The Last Dance documentary on the 90s. I guess it's on Michael Jordan and the Bulls, but so good. I'm so glad you watched that first episode because
I've seen both episodes.
You texted me and you were like, this is so good.
It's so great.
It's so good. So yeah, I mean, obviously ESPN kills it with their 30 for 30s in these documentaries, but you knew it was going to be like, it's Michael Jordan. Like, this guy's insane. And like, one of my favorite things from that was like when, do you remember the part where Roy Williams was talking? It was his coach from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he goes, Michael Jordan's like the only player I've ever seen that can turn it on and off. And he goes, and he never
turned it off.
Never freaking turns it off. I was like flipping chairs. I'm like, let's go. Like, I'm pumped up. Like, get me out on the field. I'm ready to go. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm not even like super into NBA or basketball, but just like, just seeing people like at the peak of what they can be is so cool to me.
So cool.
And seeing Michael Jordan just like fly through the air, like that's like a human being is doing that.
Well, you know, he says, you know, it's crazy. He loves playing golf. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to go play 18 holes. Well, before that series with the Boston Celtics, Danny Ainge beats him in golf. He plays for the Celtics. And he's like, all right, yeah, MJ, I'll see you tonight. And he goes, yeah, thanks, Eddie. And he's like, and by the way, tell your boy DJ, I got something for him. So Dennis Johnson was the guy that guarded Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan had 63 that night.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was such a great episode.
Yeah, and he's tell your boy I got something for him. It's crazy. Love it.
I love it. Well, it is playing right now as we speak, so I'm going to go ahead and end this. Thank you, Miles, so much for coming on again. Hope you guys have a blessed day, and thank you, everybody, for watching.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Trevor. See you, man. One of the things I hate the most, and I don't know why I hate this, is the concession stand. I despise it.